It's good to see everyone this morning, and as you'll notice up on the board, the title of my lesson this morning is A Primer on Modesty, and I wanted you to know this is something I've intended to speak on for some time, was asked to speak on the subject as well, and so now at long last we're going to be doing that. We've been somewhat delayed because of my illness. Doing much better now. My voice is actually a little stronger this morning than I thought it would be. And my desire to cough is much less, though I have a lozenge in my mouth and water prepared in case I do have a coughing fit, if you will bear with me in that situation. I want you to note as well that because of the nature of the lesson, it is to be a didactic lesson. It's not intended for admonition, but rather to teach, to instruct, to explain what the Bible teaches on a particular subject. And as a result of that, two things to note. First of all, the handouts that we put in the back, with the slides that we are utilizing, I went and added a concise outline of the material so that the definitions and verses that are used will be available to you. I made a few more copies as well. So if you would like between this hour and the next to get one of those handouts, feel free to do so. If we run out, we'll make more copies. But the second reason I wanted to note that it's a didactic lesson is because if I were to take the time to ask the question this morning, do you think that Christians should dress modestly? I know for almost a fact among us who are here today that everyone would say, of course I do. Of course I think that Christians should dress modestly, act modestly, be modest in every sense of the term. And so everyone is in agreement with regard to the necessity of being modest in our dress as well as our demeanor. But the question is, and it's a metaphor, or just, I'm using it metaphorically, but have you ever gone to your closet with the Bible in hand, metaphorically, the Bible in hand, and take one of those garments that you have on a hanger and hold it up and look and see whether or not, in fact, what the Bible teaches with regard to modesty is applicable in the particular garment to which you refer. And again, I'm not asking that you literally do that, but the question is, when we say we should dress modestly, do we have a full understanding, a clarity of understanding with regard to what the Bible teaches is modest? And I don't know that many of us have done that. Most of us say, yes, we should be modest. But when the question is asked, okay, what is modest dress? In effect, where does God draw the line? Many may not have ever studied that or may not have a clear understanding of what it is that we're going to be discussing in our lesson this morning. So that's the purpose of it, is to simply give some explanation. In the preparation of it, it dawned on me that it's going to take longer than just one lesson to share this. And I wanted to get all the information before you today. So we're going to start at the 9 o'clock hour and we'll finish it in the 11 o'clock hour. I'd like you to start with me in Galatians chapter 5. In Galatians chapter 5, and I want to read to you the lust of the flesh that are mentioned in verses 19 through 21 of Galatians chapter 5. Galatians 5, 19 through 21. We are told, now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you in times past, those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Now, concerning those things that are the lust of the flesh, there are two that I want to make note of that are found in the list. The first, they're both found in verse 19 of the text. The first was an uncleanness, and the second one is lewdness. Uncleanness and lewdness. The word uncleanness in the Greek term is akatharsia, and it is defined as that which is excessive, that which is profligate, impure, or unclean. Now, that's pretty easy to understand, except for that word profligate or profligate. And so I wanted to define that from the English. When the reference is to profligate, it means unrestrained by convention or morality. Some synonyms of that term are debauched, degenerate, degraded, dissipated, dissolute, libertine, or riotous. So when we talk about something, it is, we're not concerned with morality. Well, those who are unrighteous, those who are practicing the things that make up the lust of the flesh, they are without bound. They're libertines. They're riotous in their living. They're not concerned with convention or morality. And that certainly would describe the dress of many who are in the world today. And it is right for us to say that they are examples of uncleanness. The second word in the text is lewdness in the New King James Version. The King James Version of the New Testament is referred to as lasciviousness. And it comes from the Greek word aslogia. And it means unbridled lust, excess, licentiousness, lasciviousness, wantonness, outrageousness, shamelessness, and insolence. I want you to notice, first of all, that word shamelessness in the definition. We're going to be talking a lot about the concept of shame, shamefacedness, as an example from 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9. You'll notice up on the board, taken from the King James Version, because that's the word that the King James Version uses to translate the term, that women should adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety. For the person who is licentious, lewd, lascivious in their actions, they are not ashamed. There is a shamelessness in them. They have forgotten how to blush. And that certainly should not be the case for the Christian. So when we look at this list and we examine the world around us, we can perhaps say that with regard to dress, these two words pretty accurately describe our society, with all of the excesses that exist. Immorality is something that is pervasive in our time. Our secular society has rejected the righteousness of God, and this is seen in many different areas. Now, we're just talking about modesty this morning, but I want you to think about all of the ungodliness that exists in our society today. There is the oppression of the poor. There is the rioting and lawlessness, homosexuality of all types and descriptions, a disregard for the sanctity of the marriage bed that is described by the word fornication as it is found in our New Testament. There is gambling, there is profanity, there is innuendo and drunkenness and drug use and lying, and yes, immodesty and even nakedness that we see in our society today. I would just like you to know that that's nothing new. Now, I do understand that when we talk about cycles of morality, that there are waxing and waning attitudes that have to do with the appropriate behavior as people. But we're not the only ones as a generation or as a people, as a nation, that have engaged in the past in all types of immoralities and excesses. That's certainly something that was present in olden times. That's why there is much teaching against it in Scripture. And even in the first century, it was very prevalent. In fact, I have just a few things that I want to note that have been historically established. First of all, with regard to Roman royalty, those who are rich, and give you an example with regard to the emperors of Rome. It is known, it has been established, that adultery and orgies were common practices among the nobility. The emperor Tiberius was a serial pedophile. Nero was incestuous, as well as being a homosexual. Commodus was a cross-dresser and fond of dressing in women's clothing. The common people were not in any way innocent of such types of debauchery. In fact, the common people engaged in religious festivals that included ribald or dirty songs and poems, lewd acts, as well as promiscuity, sexual immorality, fornication. Bestiality and other sexual acts were actually exhibited in the Colosseum for the entertainment of the masses. Brothels flourished in the first century. There was gambling on gladiators and on chariot races. That was something that was very common, in fact, rampant in the first century. There was drunkenness. Massive consumption of alcohol was something that was very common, as well as a sadistic cruelty. When you think about the Roman Colosseum, the great characterizing aspect of the Colosseum and its entertainment was cruelty. cruelty to both men as well as beasts in the arena. Now, I want to remind you of what the Apostle Paul had to say in Romans, the first chapter, and verse 28 and going through verse 32, because it is very much a response to the realities of his day, and I think is somewhat prescient and applicable to the state of our society as we see it today. He said concerning those kinds of individuals that they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. So God gave them over to a debased mind to do things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, they not only do the same, but they also approve of those who practice them. That's the way the world was. It's the way the world is today. Now the question is, what does God expect of us with regard to our behavior and our demeanor as we live among those who are in the world? And the Bible is very clear with regard to our responsibilities. And I would remind you of what Peter had to say in 1 Peter the 4th chapter. It was as applicable then as it is today, and as applicable today as it was then, when Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 4 that since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, we are to, notice, we are to arm ourselves with the same mind. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he should no longer live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. Now, practically establishing what that means, he said in verse 3 that we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in what? In lewdness and lusts and drunkenness and revelries and drinking parties and abominable idolatries. And so, as we know, as Christians, and this is why when I ask, do you think that Christians should dress modestly, everyone's going to agree that that is the case, because we're not supposed to be like the Gentiles, those who are profane, those who are in the world, because Christ has died for us, and we have ostensibly professed ourselves as followers of his, then it is incumbent upon us to no longer live our lives as we did when we were in the world, when we were the Gentiles, when we were the profane, but instead that we should live our lives differently. What characterizes the world? A walk of lewdness and lusts and drunkenness and revelries and drinking parties and abominable idolatries, but that's not to be present among us as Christians. And so in our lesson today, we're going to note that immodesty is prevalent in the world. And the note, as indicated again in the text that is before us in 1 Timothy chapter 2, that God calls for us to dress and act with propriety. Now this is only one small question regarding God's call for us to be different from the world, to be pure in our actions. But it is an issue that's important to talk about, and it is as a result of what I said before. Though we know that we are to dress modestly and behave modestly, it may not be that we are as familiar with what modesty actually is, that there is a possibility that some may be ignorant of God's teaching on the matter, and as such, perhaps may have been inordinately influenced by the culture that surrounds us. And I want to especially note the importance of dealing with this among the young people. Because it is the case, the young people can be unduly influenced by peer pressure. In other words, you see the way your friends dress, you see the way your friends in school act and others, and you do not want to stand out as a sore thumb, and so there is a pressure to dress and to behave like those who are in the world. And unless there is some teaching which differentiates between those things that are acceptable to God and those things that are not with regard to what the world is doing, It may be that you may be led into actions and behavior that is actually not acceptable to God. And so what we're going to do is to ask and answer some fundamental questions regarding modesty in this hour and the time that remains, and then going into the next hour, the 11 o'clock hour in our lessons. What I want to start by doing, is define the terms. And I want to look at 1 Timothy chapter 2 in that regard in verses 9 and 10, because there are another three words that we can look at which deal with this subject explicitly. You'll notice in 1 Timothy 2 and verses 9 and 10, and I'll be reading here from the New King James. We had the Old King James up on the slide a few moments ago. Here we will be reading from the New King James, beginning in verse 9. In like manner also, the women, having reference to Christian women, are to adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. I want to note that the instructions that are given in this particular text are specifically pointed at Christian women. We'll discuss that, discuss the reason for that in just a few moments' time. But first of all, let us take the time to define what is being referred to. And you'll notice I've got up on the board modest, and it actually is a phrase, modest apparel, that is used there. And there are two Greek words, kosmios and katastole. Kosmios and katastole, which the word kosmios means modest, and katastole has reference to the apparel. So let's get out of the way. Katastole, first of all, what does that mean? Well, it literally has reference to a lowering. And I think that probably it was used to reference apparel simply because of the reality, especially before there were snaps and buttons and zippers and those kinds of things, of how individuals dressed by lowering the garment over their head and lowering it onto their body. That's what the idea of apparel is. It is a garment that is let down. It is dress. It is attire. So that's a simple word to understand. The second one is kosmios. The word kosmios that is found here and referred to as modest is actually translated in various versions as modest, modesty, or proper attire. And I think that's a good word to utilize. Let me give you just a few definitions from a number of different lexicons. Starting out with one that is always strong, is always a resource or an authority that is very concise in the definitions, but Strong defines it as orderly or decorous. Orderly or decorous attire or dress. Thayer defines it as that which is well arranged, seemly, and modest. Art and Gingrich says that which is respectable or honorable. And then Trench, in his work, he says this. He spends a little bit more time in explaining the concept. This proper order extends not only to dress and demeanor, but also to the inner life, which expresses itself in outward conversation. We're talking about modest dress, using that idea of kosmios. I want you to think for a few moments of the concept of the cosmos, because when we talk about the universe in which we live that is referred to as the cosmos, we are actually using the very same term. When people refer to the cosmos, they are talking about the ordered universe. A scientist, as they make observations, are able to make observations about the universe because the universe, it acts in accord with the laws that God has established for it. It is an ordered universe. And in fact, in other places, in other contexts, the word cosmos is translated in our Bible as the world, that which is ordered by God, governed by God's divine law. And so the concept of law is present here. When we talk about what is modest apparel, we're talking about kosmios apparel, we are talking about that which is ordered by God. And it is a fact that in every age, God has required modest dress, dress that is ordered by His dictates, by divine law. We're not simply going to assert that, we're going to establish that that is the case. We go to God's Word always to decide issues of modesty. We must not go to our own opinions. It is improper for us to go to culture. What we perceive, we must recognize the possibility that our view of things may very well have been determined not so much by what God's Word teaches, but how we were raised and the views and the attitudes, the mores of our day. And so we need to recognize that as we discuss these particular issues. In our lesson, this concept of modesty, the word kosmios, apparel, ordered apparel, it not only has reference to underdressing, which is what we typically talk about when we talk about immodest dress, but it also has reference to outward overdressing, that is, ostentatiousness. And it's kind of an interesting point, isn't it? The reason why, and I think Trench touched upon this, the order extends not only to dress but and demeanor, but to the inner life. In other words, our dress must be something that is derived from what is within us as Christians. It is an expression of how we feel about things, about God, and about His will and our place in the world. Now, what is one of the things, one of the characteristics that God hates about men? A haughty look, pride, arrogance, is it not? And I want you to understand that overdressing, gaudiness in dress, is inappropriate because it is an exhibition of pride. You want to show off. And there are a lot of people who do that. By their dress, they're trying to show off, either show off their figure or show off their attributes or show off their money. And so they overdress. They want to bring attention to themselves. That's not appropriate for the child of God. But also, it is the responsibility of a child of God to live lives of holiness and purity. And so if we dress in such a way as to entice lust, well, that licentiousness is likewise condemned by this term. In other words, we're to be respectful and honorable in our dress at all times. I want to go to the second definition. It comes from the Greek word eidos, And it is translated in the various translations to which you can reference. Here it is propriety, but it's also translated shamefacedness, shamefastness, sensibility, modestly, decency, propriety, and again, decently. So the idea of decency or propriety is here, but I want to emphasize that word shamefacedness that is found in the King James, because I think that perhaps is the best word, though it's an old-fashioned one, to describe the concept that is established here. Strong defines eidos as the idea of downcast eyes or bashfulness. In fact, when we think about downcast eyes before God, we talk about reverence and awe, and the word is used for that purpose. Shamefacedness, when I am presenting myself before God, I'm like the publican who would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I am going to approach God in awe. I'm going to lower my eyes because of my respect toward him. Now, with regard to the interaction between men, that concept of shamefacedness, and again, remember that in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9, the reference specifically is to women, is an idea of bashfulness, not boldness. But a woman, as she is approached by men, she looks down. She casts her eyes down because of the shame that is present. And that, of course, not saying that you have to do that literally whenever a man approaches you, but it is something that should be kept in mind, this idea of shamefacedness with regard to, or bashfulness with regard to, your dress before others. Thayer says it is a sense of shame or honor, modesty, bashfulness, reverence, regard for others, or respect. And Trench, in describing this, he says it doesn't refer merely to the avoidance of open and manifest baseness. It refers to the complete control over the passions and desires so that they are lawful and they are reasonable. In 1 Timothy 2:9, Trench says it is modesty that shrinks from exceeding the limits of womanly reserve. Now, when you look at the world Is it in the world that the concept of reserve is present in the dress of many women? Certainly not. But it ought to be with regard to women who are Christians. A womanly reserve. That I am going to consider the circumstances, I'm going to consider the company that I might find myself in, and I'm going to dress with propriety, with shamefacedness. I'm going to ensure that the dress that I show myself in is something that keeps in mind that I am to have that proper respect for, that proper sense of shame, that bashfulness that should be present as a woman when I am presenting myself in public. That's the idea that is found in that particular concept. Now, when we talk about the word shamefacedness that I mentioned from the King James, I think is the best word to describe it. Let me give you an example. Back in the 1960s, the miniskirt came into vogue. I've used the beginnings of the bikini, and it's, that's an interesting thing too, because the bikini, when it came into being, when the designer tried to put it in a fashion show, none of the women would wear it. And so he actually hired, because the models wouldn't wear a bikini, he hired a prostitute to do the modeling of the bikini because the women said, you know, when we get to that point, and again, that's a cultural thing, had nothing to what God says, but look at society. I'm not going to wear this. I would be ashamed to wear this, but a prostitute wasn't. And so that's how the bikini that is prevalent, again, on beaches and at swimming pools now, that's where it had its beginning. But in the 1960s, the miniskirt also became something that was pretty popular among young ladies. And it's interesting, if you go to Wikipedia or some other place to look at the beginnings of the miniskirt, it was specifically stated that it was a sign of insolence and impertinence from young ladies toward their mothers and what society expected of them. In other words, the miniskirt in its inception was a form of rebelliousness. I don't want to dress like society tells me I should dress. I don't want to dress like my mother dresses. I want to dress differently. I want to show out. I want to be seen in a different way. And so I'm going to wear my skirt with a hem much higher than was present at that particular time. So it was a sign of rashness. Remember what we talked about with regard to propriety? The womanly reserve that should be present. The opposite, the inner spirit that should be a modest, shamefaced spirit. Well, that wasn't the case then among those women who wore miniskirts. They say, well, yeah, but now it's accepted. It's not rebellion anymore. No, it isn't. And I understand that. So are we going to begin to say that because society has accepted it? We say the same thing with a bikini, couldn't we? Say the same thing with a string bikini, couldn't we? With regard to how it is accepted by society, the world rejoices in it. We don't use that as our standard as to what is right and what is wrong. And the idea that society does not look askance at us because our hemlines are too high doesn't mean that it's acceptable to God, because God is the standard. But I just wanted to point out that at that time, it was the opposite of shamefacedness. What should have caused blushing did not. And that is not a characteristic of God's people. You remember that Judah became so rebellious toward God that in Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 15, Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 15, God condemned Judah and said this, "Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? No. They were not at all ashamed, nor did they know how to blush." They did not know how to blush. The third and final definition, this is basically going to be the end of this section of our study, is the word moderation. And it comes from the Greek word sophrosune, and I know I may not be pronouncing them exactly right, but it is translated in various versions as sobriety, that which is discreet, propriety, moderation, or suitable. And again, to give you a quick definition, Strong said it's a soundness of mind. In fact, when we talk about sophrosune, it is in contrast to those individuals who are insane, when it is used in that context. Is he insane? Is he crazy? No, he is sophrosune. He is in his right mind. He is sane. But with regard to the idea of dress, the soundness of that dress, self-control, sobriety. Arnt and Gingrich says it is reasonableness. It is mental soundness, good judgment, moderation or self-control. And then Trench says it's that habitual self-control with its constant reign on all the passions and desires that hinders temptations from overcoming the checks and balances of eidos, or that idea of propriety or shamefacedness. So let's just conclude with regard to these definitions what we're saying. And we'll get into the majority of our material in the next lesson. The Holy Spirit uses three words to denote the faithful Christian's approach to dress in all circumstances. Understand this, the occasion of dress is not germane. It doesn't matter if it's church, sports, swimming, cheerleading, going to a party. The Christian's dress must have the characteristics of kosmios, eidos, and sophrosune at all times, in every aspect of their lives. I want to leave you with a quote. The quote is from the 1950 edition of the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia that describes the attitude that one pagan had concerning the behavior of Christian women in the first century. And I think it is something that is interesting. He said concerning them, or this is the ISBE, 1915. They no longer needed the former splendor of outward adornment. We're talking about those who were in the pagan society, but then they were converted to Christ. They no longer needed the former splendor of outward adornment because they were clothed with the beauty and simplicity of Christ-like character. They exchanged the temples and the theaters and the festivals of paganism for their home. They labored with their hands. They cared for their husbands and children. They graciously dispensed Christian hospitality. They nourished their spiritual life in the worship, service, and sacraments of the church and in loving ministries to the sick. Their modesty and their simplicity were a rebuke to and a reaction from the shameless extravagances and immoralities of heathenism. They were among the most conspicuous examples of the transforming power of Christianity is manifest from the admiration and astonishment of the pagan Libanius, who exclaimed this, "What women these Christians have." Brethren, I would so desire that when individuals look at the women of this congregation, those who have named the name of Christ, and the world looks at the men look at them, that they would say the same. Because of your demeanor, because of your behavior, because of your dress, because of the contrast that you show in these things from the extravagancies and the excesses of the world around us, that they would say not you're like them, but rather what women these Christians have. How much you have changed from what you might have been. We have spent enough of our past lifetime living as the Gentiles live, but now because of the difference that we see in our lives, the world looks at us and say, wow, that's just amazing. Now, I do want to note that up to this point in time, because we have dealt exclusively with the text of 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9, we've been talking about women in their dress because that's the focus. We're going to expand that focus in our discussion later and understand that this is inclusive of men as well. But I do want to note these things as a way of introducing our study. We'll be talking about some principles of modesty and where God draws the line in the material that we will share with you in the 11 o'clock hour. Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention. We'll again pick up with this in an hour's time or so as we get into the next material. We're going to offer an invitation. If there's anyone who is here this morning at this time who desires to become obedient to the gospel of Christ, we give you that opportunity. If you have that need, we call upon you to come now while together we stand and while we sing.